55 burgers, 55 fries, 55 tacos, 55 pies, 55 coke, 55 wings, 55 shakes, 55 pancakes, 55 pasta, 55 pepper.
And 55 Days at Peking, which was the number one movie in America.
Okay, that'll be $680.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name's Sean Collier. I am here with two X-Men that haven't been brought over from the other franchise yet. It's Camila Adams.
I promise I will be there in Doomsday.
And Robin Hitchcock.
I'm also in Doomsday.
Who isn't? Captain Marvel, I think? Wasn't that one of the ones that didn't have a name on a chair?
Oh maybe.
Really?
There was a thing where Robert Downey Jr. was standing next to 38 chairs.
You know,
and I think Brie Larson was not one of the names.
Brie Larson deserves a better career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She won Best Actress.
Yeah.
At a very good, and now I will begin my real work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes winning an Oscar does not do good things for your career.
Mm. Well, Avengers Age of Ultron, 61 2/3. This is the fourth movie with that exact score. I guess we've done a lot of them by now, it's probably math things. But we think all of Avengers Age of Ultron, CB4, The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2, and The Natural are a 61.67.
Wow, so. The Natural and Age of Ultron, the same.
Yeah.
And CB4.
I feel like I underrated both CB4 and The Natural.
Well, The Natural still wins that tie thanks to my 84. It's baseball season, everybody. Hello.
Happy home opener day.
Yeah, I'm not. I haven't gone in a long time because it's.
I also haven't gone in a while.
It's what if a normal baseball game, but way too crowded and half the people there don't know what they're talking about.
I've never been to home opener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I go a couple. This isn't a baseball podcast. We're here to talk about
many of those.
We're here to talk about a movie that I don't know if any of us cared about. We drew 55 Days at Peking.
I might want to talk about baseball.
Actually. I know. Yeah. Well, can we just say hello to anyone who is actually listening to this episode?
Hello. God bless you.
Hi. Like, that means they're here for us.
Yeah, you are diehards, and we love you.
Appreciate you.
Because, like, I am a huge fan of various podcasts where I do not listen to every episode. Right. And I can say, you know, I pay for the Patreon, still don't listen to every episode. Mm-hmm. If it's a movie I've never heard of, I'm probably not listening.
Right.
So if you're listening to this, we love you.
Yeah. If you were ever going to skip. No, stick around. Anything can happen. Yeah. Maybe one of us loved. None of us loved this.
I did like it more than I expected to, I will say.
I didn't. Camila?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll get there. What had happened was we drew it for, then we can confirm that it's a real movie. It is. And one of those that's very available because nobody gives a shit.
Right.
Like, whatever studio owns this right now, they're like, put it up and we don't care. We're not making a dime off of this ever.
Well, yet. You know what? Tubi had the fucking nerve to take it down on April 1st.
Did they really?
Yes.
Did you watch it on YouTube?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Because I started it on Tubi.
Okay.
And then the next day they were like, fuck you.
Every time. Every time we record.
It's fucking crazy because Tax Collector has been on there for like a year. I don't understand. What are we doing?
I'm surprised anyone at Tubi maintains the schedule. Like, I thought they just waited until someone said, hey, you've had a witness on there for like 6 years after you stopped. Oh, okay, we'll take that down. Shit, sorry, we're Tubi. Who cares?
People streamer.
I did say, which one's Peking? That's just Beijing.
Yeah.
I think Peking is like an over-Americanization or a Westernization.
Yeah.
And Beijing is a little closer to the actual name.
That's usually how it goes.
So this is a movie. It has Charlton Heston and Ava Gardner and David Niven and lots of people in yellowface. Mm-hmm. And it's about the Boxer Rebellion, kind of. And it's not very interesting.
No.
Now it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. No. I don't know. I don't really like war movies. I do like 60, 70-year-old Technicolor things.
Me too. That's why I enjoyed it more than I expected to.
But this one just doesn't have a lot going on.
Well, legend has it, if you watch this long enough, an old white grandpap will show up in your living room in a bark lounger.
It's true.
And if you don't kick him out within 30 minutes, he'll say, the thing about the Chinese is no. It was okay when we were just looking at the explosions.
And then going, that Ava Gardner.
Right.
Because can we talk about that Ava Gardner? Boy, was she good looking.
Yeah. I mean, she was.
And this is like, you know, past her prime. Yeah. Yes. And I'm still like, girl.
Yeah, because it wasn't until like I got an extreme close-up and I was like, oh, this is like much later Ava. Yeah. Like, okay, so she's still hitting it.
And she just looks so good in this movie. Yeah. And like, the character is so stupid.
There is.
Let's do the plot recap. Let's get that out of the way.
Yeah. And then some facts, just to hopefully give the 12 of you that are still listening a little context, beginning with what this movie is about. Hey, we had a 2-week streak of people forgetting it was their recap. Are you prepared?
I have written something.
Okay.
All right.
I knew it. I remembered it was my recap.
Thank you. The responsible one. Here's Camila to tell you what happens over those 55 days at Peking.
It's 1900 during the Boxer Rebellion in China. There's a group of foreign diplomats and soldiers trapped in Peking during a 55-day siege by Boxers secretly backed by the Empress. Charlton Heston is an American Marine and Ava Gardner is a Baroness. Soldiers are defending their compound. Aw, tiny puppy, find his bark. No. When a German guy is murdered in the street, the siege finally begins. Ava starts picking up shifts at the hospital. Ooh, Oscar Isaac was on Hot Ones? What's he promoting? Oh, second season of Beef? No, wait, focus. Ava sells some jewelry to buy some medical supplies. War is happening. Charlton has to tell a little girl her dad is dead. They're trying to conserve food and water while feeding an orphanage masked man thirst trap. Nope. Wait, when did Ava get shot? Now she's dead. Someone comes to save them and they win? Did I mention I wasn't very good in history or geography class?
Oh, they won.
No, you nailed it. That's really all we need to know.
There's a few scenes that are kind of like, movie stuff. And the rest of it, it's like when you're like reading a book and you're like, if I just move my eyes over all these words,
something will.
It counts that I read it, right?
Something will catch.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what's happening.
Okay. Right.
But I'm going through the experience.
Yes.
Good scenes in this movie. Number one, the opening where they're like, here's where you are. And it's just all the different national anthems sort of cacophonizing.
Yeah,
it was okay. Yeah.
Good establishment of the situation. Good quality filmmaking. The scene where the priest explains the canon.
Oh,
like the boom boom cannon, not like the great works cannon.
Right.
I loved him because they took so much time to be like, here are the 8 countries. It's America, it's Austria-Hungary, it's France, it's Germany, Ireland, nowhere, but we got him. Right. We got the one. We needed a kindly Irish priest
who loves a giant gun.
Yeah. That was good.
The scene where the Russian guy is like, hey, Baroness, you are going to seduce Charlton Heston. She's like, too fucking late.
Done and done. And I mean done.
Those are the good scenes.
I noted the first compelling thing was the try to hit me with the sword scene.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
And that was 40 minutes in. The flags was nice. The flags was nice. That's my review of...
I love a flag. But
Camila, I liked your mention of like, when did she get shot? Because I had the exact same reaction. And I tried really hard to pay attention to this. She's... My phone was on the table, you know, but like
she was in like a jewelry store or something. And then like the next scene, I blinked and then dude was like, Baroness has been shot. I'm like, the fuck?
Yes. She sold Chekhov's expensive necklace to pay for...
Which good costume design there.
Yeah. Yeah. To pay for basically medicine and food. Right. And then, but she was bringing it back. Like she was riding on a cart full of apples.
Oh yeah.
Through the gate.
What happens?
Yeah. Yeah. And the Boxers went, shit, gates open, start shooting and shot her.
Oh. Wow. Absolutely missed the apple cart.
I remember the apple cart. I just didn't realize that she was being wounded in that incident.
Well, she didn't do much in that scene. She kind of went, and
next thing you know, she's in the hospital bed with the soft lighting.
I know, the very gauzy face.
I can't see you. Are you there?
It is true. Like, it is the death scene from every movie from 1941 to 1965. Yes.
And this is towards the end of that, in fact. May 29th, 1963, went to number one on June 5th, so about a week later, the 11th number one movie of that year. This is from 63 years ago. We don't know how much money it made that week. We know it made about $10 million overall.
700 doubloons.
Exactly. no one has it in the top 10 movies of 1963. It actually was a bit of a financial disappointment because, as you can tell, this was a very expensive production.
It looks expensive.
And it did well, but more in that like sleeper hit, slowly made money way. It was not a blockbuster by any stretch. It did end a 6-week reign by How the West Was Won.
Wild movie.
I meant to go see it a couple of weeks ago. It was actually at Row House a couple weeks ago.
Oh, really?
And I schedule got screwed
up. It's like an anthology of weird Western stories.
Sounds great.
You might like it. You'll definitely like parts of it.
And it won 1 week and then gave it back to How the West Was Won, which won another 3 weeks after it. So it was just a blip on the radar. Hey, no surprise here. Production was a mess. The screenplay was not nearly complete when production began. These producers had done stuff like this before. The trailer.
I was just going to say.
This is the Forbidden City of Peking. In the year 1900.
Here they come!
The year of the Boxer Uprising. Against the never-before-seen canvas of China, with all its mystery and adventure, its savagery and barbarism, is told the epic saga of a handful of men and women of 11 nations who battled the armies of an empress while the world looked on and held its breath. 55 Days at Peking, starring Charlton Heston, Ava Gardner, David Niven.
I admire Sir Arthur. He always gives me the feeling that God must be an Englishman.
Also starring Flora Robson as the treacherous Dowager Empress, John Ireland as Sergeant Harry, Harry Andrews as Father de Bell, Leo Gen, the wise counselor General Yung Lu, Robert Heltman, the wily Prince Tuan. Kurt Kasner as the Russian ambassador, Baron Ivanov.
You've always known that I have a way with men, Sergei.
The Major?
What do you want?
What was she really like? This beautiful woman who had a way with men.
What happens to you in Tenzin?
I will be entirely in your hands, Major.
You're in my hands now, but you seem to keep slipping through my fingers.
55 Days of Hope. 55 days of heroism. 55 days of hell. 55 days at Peking.
I didn't even write down his name.
Well, the trailer really, and not Goldwyn. an unimportant Samuel producer really emphasizes the producer in a way that made me, instead of paying attention to the next 7 minutes of trailer, because it's one of those long trailers, think about how we really don't talk about movie producers the same way we used to. No. We talk about studios.
Yeah.
But like there's like the last one I can really think of is like Jerry Bruckheimer.
Right. Yeah. Mm. No, you're right. And then always like you'll, and if you pay attention to opening credits a lot of the times or to the producer credits, it's like people sneak up and like, oh shit, Brad Pitt was an executive producer on this random movie or whatnot.
Brad Pitt executive produces a ton of movies.
Right.
Yeah. He's won an Oscar for producing a movie. Yeah.
And Spielberg was Hamnet. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh, what's Spielberg doing here? He's nominated for Best Picture.
Right.
He's the producer of Hamnet. El Cid, Samuel Bronston, is the name that is really prominent in the trailer.
Oh, and it says something, and this is a title card, so you won't hear it in the episode, but it says, like, as unforgettable as El Cid. And I was like, a movie I've never heard of.
I've heard of that.
I've heard of that novel. But I don't know anything about it.
I don't know. I've never seen it.
Yeah.
I know that I have seen the...
The title.
Yes.
You are aware that film exists.
Walked past it at a Blockbuster, I'm sure.
Charlton Heston was in that too.
Okay.
And Samuel Bronston also did King of Kings, the Jesus one of these.
Okay.
Or one of the Jesus ones of these.
Like Ben-Hur is arguably that, Ten Commandments is
right,
not Jesus, but Bible.
So he had done this kind of same stuff genre. Before.
Yes.
They were like, we should do another one of those.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. Someone else was already working on a thing about the Boxer Rebellion. He literally saw a chapter title in a book about China called 55 Days of Peking and was like, there, that's the picture.
That's a title.
They fought over the thing. Anyway, they decided they were doing this. They sold foreign rights to it before anything had happened. And so they were like, shit, we need a script. Didn't really get there.
So were they like improvising or like they had like writers like on set being like, here, try this.
Multiple drafts, multiple writers.
Yeah.
Everyone was unhappy. Niven threatened to quit unless they wrote him better material. That's why he has a 5-minute soliloquy late in the first half.
Question.
Yeah.
Blank. Question.
Right.
Yes.
Ava Gardner completely mentally checked out, kept not showing up, drank so heavily she couldn't remember her lines in multiple scenes.
I was
going to say,
I was like, she definitely seemed a little substance-y.
Oh, they, and apparently they pivoted and her dying was a result of them just being annoyed with her.
Oh.
Like, I think in earlier drafts, she made it to the end.
And they were like, we got to get rid of this chick.
And she dies like 20 minutes before the end. They didn't save themselves much time. No. But
maybe they were filming a lot of the middle after that. Oh, I wanted to say something about the trailer. I made fun of the trailer for being 7 minutes long, but I do kind of wish we could return to that because, like, I like the bit where they're like, an Ava Gardner's character. Here's her deal.
That was fun.
I wouldn't mind that happening in current trailers, right? It's like, you know that moment that we have in a lot of trailers where they're like, and guess who's also in the movie? And mm-hmm. you see like a semi-famous actor's face,
right?
I wish that that would go, and this character, Baroness. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I want that description stuff to come back a little bit.
Interesting. How long into the movie was it before you realized she was supposed to be Russian? Because it was like, it was a full hour.
Oh, pause. I knew right
until
away.
Until I looked at Wikipedia the next day. Russian Baroness. Oh, okay. Oh.
I was paying just enough attention to understand that she had lost her Russian citizenship by cheating on her husband or whatever.
Charlton Heston tried to go along, but later wrote in his journal, what I have learned from this, I hope permanently, is never start a film without a good finished script.
thought
you would have known that, Chuck.
Right, yeah, I feel like that was like day one here, buddy.
Nicholas Ray is the director, also directed King of Kings, Rebel Without a Cause, In a Lonely Place. He was the director, but the film gave him a heart attack. Did it for a few weeks.
Oh, boy.
Heart attack. He survived. He lived for a good while afterwards, but they're like, okay, he's done.
So he only directed some of it.
He directed maybe about half of it.
Okay.
Guy Green, who did Light in the Piazza, came in, had a bad time, left fairly quickly. Jeez. Andrew Martin, who sometimes directed things, but was mainly a second unit director, including the chariot race in Ben-Hur.
Okay, so he knows what he's doing.
Right. Stepped in and got it to the finish line.
Okay.
So at what point do you say, let's not inflict the same pain upon an audience? Because those involved in making it seem to have a horrible time.
I mean, counterpoint is Apocalypse Now, right? Like, there's so many troubled productions that produce great movies.
Well, and this was later a big Roger Corman tactic. He would say, we got this thing, it's called this, it's going to be great, and sell distribution rights to a company in Germany and a company in Japan and a company in India and finance the film on these early deals, like, give me $50,000 and you can be the distributor in India. And then you kind of have to make the movie.
Right.
Even if it's going to be terrible, it's the deal was I would give you. Yeah. And yet, expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
Costume design for that necklace.
Nope.
Oh.
There's two.
Production design.
Nope.
Cinematography.
No.
Score.
Yes. And I liked the score. Music score, substantially original is what we called
substantially
it.
Substantially original. I mean, they did have all those national anthems.
Which lost two. You're not going to.
Hang on one second.
Oh, sorry.
If it's 1963, well, I'm just going to guess Tom Jones because it won Best Picture.
It's Tom Jones.
There you go.
I doubted.
Yeah. I don't know the other one.
That's the last thing in this film if you made it all the way to the end.
What? Sound?
Best original song.
Oh, you're kidding me.
There's an original song at the end.
After the end, it's black for a second, and then it fades back in on So Little Time, Peking Theme by Andy Williams.
Oh.
Please cut in Nelson saying Andy Williams.
Andy Williams!
And it's a song, and yeah. I guess there weren't that many that year.
All right.
This was best, it was I Lost to Call Me Irresponsible from the Jackie Gleason film Papa's Delicate Condition.
What?
It must have been a weak year. Also nominated was It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Oh, remember yeah. when they were singing at the beginning?
Okay. Yeah.
It's just a bunch of people singing that, that sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like a weak year.
Yeah, had to be. It did not win either of those, obviously. Let's go to history class. The Boxers were officially known as the Society of Righteous and Harmonious Fists. Way better name.
I agree. And I do. Yeah. I was really, I learned this week that they were called the Boxers because of fists. I always thought that they were like packaging things.
No, no, no. The Westerners saw martial arts for the first time and was like, oh, that's that Chinese boxing.
Oh.
And then that morphed into they're the Boxers. They were a secret society. They formed in the very, very late 19th century. Thank you. As China was, that part was true. China had a series of droughts, famines. That was coinciding with foreign countries showing up and wanting to take advantage of China's resources and
people. This is like peak imperialism time.
Right.
And they were like, look at this. We want it.
Right. So all of these countries are there trying to get pieces of China. It was true that 13 of 18 provinces had like foreign areas that had been chipped off. And things
Little Netherlands.
Right. And things were going badly at the time. So this secret society formed to try to drive out the foreigners, which put a pin in that. That's my rant when the facts are done. And they were indeed defeated by a group of eight nations, which was one thing that led towards the end of the Qing dynasty. I know at the end of this movie, she says the dynasty is over.
Yeah.
Not quite, but this certainly contributed. Yes, I am dramatically oversimplifying. By the way, the quote, there's a famous quote from this movie that people don't acknowledge is from this movie. The quote, "Let China sleep, for when she wakes, the world will tremble," is traditionally attributed to Napoleon. Nope, yeah. It's just from this movie.
Awesome. I love when that happens.
And final fact and bit of history, this may be the last movie JFK ever saw.
Wow.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
What a shame.
Yeah, to go out on this note.
Oh, boy.
It's certainly the last movie he watched at the White House before he left on his final journey.
Oh.
Isn't that a shame?
Yeah.
Speaking of shame, one of the things that kept me out of this one is this is a war, a battle, whatever it is, where both sides really suck.
Yes.
On the one side, you have colonialist powers just coming in and helping themselves to an Eastern nation. On the other side, you have angry people killing foreigners and religious minorities.
Yeah.
Those are the two sides.
Yeah.
Who am I rooting for here?
Yeah, there's no...
The orphan? She's okay.
Okay, I'm going to add that to the list of good scenes. I'm going to be honest with you. When Charlton Heston tells her that her dad died, because she does all the work.
As I said, there's something I have to tell you.
Is it about my father?
Yes.
Is he dead?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, isn't that the life of a woman?
Right, exactly. She's like, quite literally like, get on with it, man. Like,
are you
like,
informing me of my father's death?
What? Hello?
And yes, she was the only credited Chinese person.
Really?
Okay.
If you read the opening credits, there are, I mean, I don't want to assume. I'm pretty sure in the opening credits, there are two Asian names, and one of them is the Japanese general.
Oh, boy.
And she's the other one.
I got to say, like, you know, we talked about this when we did West Side Story recently, like brown face, yellow face. It's all wrong. It's just wrong. And in this movie, it doesn't make any sense is the thing. I don't understand why they felt like they couldn't cast Chinese people to do these roles. It's not like Flora Robson was a huge box office draw. Does that make sense?
Right.
Like, what?
Were there even any like that many speaking roles?
I mean, it's really like Flora Robson and her two advisors are like the main ones, and they're all white people.
Right. And
yeah.
I couldn't tell if they were supposed to be Chinese.
They were
what.
Supposed to be Chinese.
Like, I knew she was supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the thing is that, like, they, we say yellow face, it's not like super offensive makeup. It's not like Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's. It's not super offensive makeup. It's just pointless casting of white people.
Yeah.
And it's I'm reading a book right now because I mentioned it last time too, the book about Anna May Wong. this, not excuse, just an explanation. This is just how it was from the dawn of cinema.
Yeah.
You had white people play the main Asian characters, and all of the supporting and extras were the actual Asians.
Yeah. That's so weird.
It's just, there was not part of it. I mean, the suggestion is that pattern became so ingrained because they wouldn't have interracial anything relationships in the early days, and certainly during the Hays Code. Yeah. So like you could have a white man kissing a white woman playing a Chinese woman, but you couldn't have a white man kissing a Chinese woman.
Mm. I'm trying to think. Have you ever seen the movie Sayonara?
No.
Probably if you're not on an Oscars quest, you wouldn't. Right. Red Buttons and Miyoshi Umeki both won supporting Oscars for that movie, and they play a married couple. I can't remember if they kiss.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what year is that?
1957.
It might, maybe by then.
Yeah.
But certainly not early, and certainly that was part of, and man, did this one stick around, you know, where like Emma Stone played Asian like 10, 12 years ago.
Right.
So did Scarlett Johansson. She's an android. It's a little bit of a,
it's still gross. Pointless. They shouldn't have done it.
It's still gross. Yeah, that's.
Also, Emma Stone's ancestry in the film Aloha is that she is half white, one quarter Hawaiian, and one quarter Chinese, which is also Keanu Reeves' background.
Oh. Keanu Reeves is one quarter Chinese. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You did a whole podcast.
Yeah.
I did enjoy.
The variable whiteness of Keanu Reeves is something we would talk about when we would do that show.
I do legitimately like, you know, there's just thousands of people on screen, and I love it when that happens, and know that they're real.
Like, that is the thing, is that, like, you're saying movies of this scale from this time, there's just a part of me that is gonna go ooh. Like, it, even if it's boring and not very good, like this one, I'm like, look at all those people,
just sort of the sheer choreography of it all.
Look how big that set is. Yeah. Right,
they were filming in Spain. These people loved filming in Spain. Spain can look like a lot of places. Yeah. It's like California. And they were like, we need 3,000 extras. We need 1,500 of them to be Chinese. And what came back was, there are 300 adult Chinese people in Spain.
Right.
Period. We got 300 nationwide. So they literally imported like every Chinese guy in Europe. And we're like, we'll give you a couple $100. Just come here and walk around for a few weeks.
And they're like, cool.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah,
they're fine with it. Ava Gardner is so bad at not being near where bullets are. There's a solid half an hour where she's like, I need to get to that guy. Oh, he got shot. And she doesn't hide even a little bit. That's when I knew she was like not really checked in.
Yeah.
Where like the war has started and she's kind of like, I was trying to get over there. Like, what a weird, her character is so pointless.
I felt like
cut the whole thing.
Yeah, she wasn't.
I enjoyed there being an extra woman around, and I enjoyed looking at Ava Gardner's perfect face.
Perfect face.
Yeah.
Charlton Heston seemed like he couldn't be bothered.
No, he really was bored. David Niven, though, I do think was working hard.
He was doing something. Yeah. Okay. No, yeah. He was. He added, I think I read that part was for Alec Guinness. And he probably,
that makes sense.
He probably knew that and went, I can British too.
I feel like David Niven probably played Alec Guinness's cast-offs more than anything else in his entire career. They did win Oscars back to back.
Did we need to watch them plant bombs in the arsenal in real time?
That was excruciating.
I thought
that something had happened because I wasn't paying attention at that moment. And I was like, why is it so quiet? What's going on?
So wait, Oscar Isaac's on the next season of Beef?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I know.
No, it was impossible to pay attention to this. I would have needed until intermission, I watched in one sitting, pausing frequently and repeatedly rewinding because I straight fell asleep. Like, fairly early in the year, like, I want to say like 9:15, just gone. Then I think I did 45 minutes, like, first thing in the morning the next day, like, when I was nice and alert.
Yeah.
And the rest was at the gym. I was like, I bet the good guys are winning. I can kind of half. But it's so, I like that epic scale. And I really like when it's presented like this. In fact, your Letterboxd list is Overtures, intermissions, on-tract, and exit music. A list of films that have those. I love when we present movies like this.
Me too.
But it didn't feel like this is, what are some of the other movies on this list? 2001 A Space Odyssey, Apocalypse Now, Barry Lyndon, Ben-Hur. It doesn't feel like this is an epic story that needed to be 2 hours and 38 minutes long. It felt like we just were trying to do that thing, so we stretched this the fuck out. Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is a movie set in an exotic location with thousands of extras, so it is inherently epic.
Right.
And it's a war movie. That always tends to lend a little bit, but this could be a tight 90 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't think I like war movies.
You know what? I don't love them.
I don't particularly care for them.
What's a good one?
All Quiet on the Western Front.
I haven't seen either.
The old one, I meant. The new one's fine.
Saving Private Ryan. Yeah.
Yeah, we have an episode on that.
That's good.
Do we?
We do. It was around the same time as Black Hawk Down.
Oh, that was our war era.
Oh, yeah. I forgot we did that one.
Weren't so bad.
But, like, I think Saving Private Ryan's a great movie. I'm not. If it's on HBO, I'm not stopping.
Exactly.
No. It's absolutely not a date. I have no reason to watch it again unless I'm on another podcast talking about it.
Fury. I remember liking Fury.
Never saw that one.
Does Inglourious Bastards count?
Yeah.
Sort of. What's the one?
And if Inglourious.
Hepburn. Newton.
No. Catherine,
Bigelow. Yes. Hurt Locker.
Yes.
Hurt Locker's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's when they're
Three Kings.
Yes.
I think Jarhead is underrated.
I've never seen Jarhead.
So maybe it's just war movies post or pre 1985. We're just not.
Well, there's plenty of bad ones. Like Hacksaw Ridge was bad, and Lone Survivor was bad. Like American Sniper is not good. I don't know. I think that lots of people like American Sniper.
I don't get it.
I guess when it's a story about people that happen to be soldiers or a small group of soldiers.
Right. Like Saving Private Ryan is set in a war, but it's really a character-driven piece. Like,
right.
The first half hour is war movie, but then the bulk of the film is like, look at these guys.
Yeah.
But when you're trying to give me like, here's what the war was.
That makes sense. Yeah. So the more character-driven ones are the ones that are actually, I enjoy.
Yeah.
But I still don't. It takes a lot for me to go to watch them. Like, it's never my first choice.
Well, war is the worst thing that people do.
Right.
So it's a little bit like, why make a movie about the worst thing that people do?
Right. Let's just put these guys. These are very interesting characters. Can we just put them in a factory?
Right. Mm-hmm. Or, I don't know, maybe they're all having brunch together.
Right.
Anybody?
I got nothing.
No, I forgot my notes, but I think my notes were really just like writing down the Oscar nominees and then... What was the name of the canon? Betsy.
Yeah.
I wrote in huge letters. Betsy.
I was confused by the toddler sailor uniforms.
Also, that toddler didn't survive. He got shot and died. And they're like, he's going to be fine. No, he's not. Don't patronize us. He's 30 pounds. Right. He got full shot and fell over. He's dead now.
So dead.
Oh, that poor child.
Look, at one time, come to the movies and look at stuff you don't usually get to look at was a whole genre.
Yeah.
And here we are. And it doesn't work for me now. I started at 20. I added 2 points because it's great. Anytime in a movie that you see people fall a long way off of a thing and it's scary, but also kind of silly.
Yeah.
So when they fall off the wall, that was great.
The wall scene was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the weird firework tower that the boxers bring at the end was, it's not getting any more points. I'm putting that in the 20.
Okay.
2 points for having an intermission and 1 point for an accidental water rainbow. Did you see the rainbow?
No.
Oh, in like the last battle, like a thing hits the water and it whooshes up and you get that water rainbow for a second. Nice. I just love that because, you know, that wasn't an effect.
Right.
That's nice.
That is nice.
25.
Huh. Oh, I'm way higher than that.
Camila?
Also 25.
Okay. I'm going to say I'm not above 50, but I'm close. I enjoyed watching this. I'm going to say 46.
That leaves us at 32. Not something we need to tell you to...
Yeah, no... Don't put this on your list.
Don't do that.
No.
But like, you don't need to.
I mean, unless you're like really like trying to fill out Ava Gardner's filmography.
Yes, right?
Or you love a war film.
I don't know. Maybe you just need to go to sleep. I it was so effective. That first hour where nothing happens. Like, I feel like if I put this on a plane, I'm right out.
All right.
Yeah, it doesn't take much for me.
It's on YouTube.
That would be the
whole
a
thing's
good
on YouTube.
Yeah. Letterbox list. Is movie night quality.
Movies to nap to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Camila, I think you have all of the bingo cards.
Oh, shit. I didn't make any new ones.
All right. Next week. Because, you got a bingo last time.
All right, then. Time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Did you go see the drama?
I sure did. I think we should save it because I'm going to spoil it.
Mm. We should save it for a future episode?
Yeah, No. I was going to say save it for the end of You Can't Handle the Truth. But then I'm like, only 15 people are listening to this anyway. The drama.
Wait, don't spoil it.
I won't actually spoil it then. Okay. Great.
Okay.
But what I will say is consider looking up spoilers before you go see this movie. Because the...
Was that your dog?
Yeah, that's Max.
Oh, but he's barking.
Yeah.
It sounded like it was falling down a well.
I know. It was...
Like you heard like a brew.
Let me just check the camera to make sure he's not falling down. Okay.
There's a well here.
I used to have a laundry chute and I remember thinking if that dog gets curious enough, that's.
So look up spoilers.
I don't know if you had heard, like I heard the reason I saw it yesterday is that I heard that there was like a twist. Mm. It's not a twist. It's a plot. The plot of the movie is secret. And like they literally told critics who they sent to screenings, which does not include us, not to spoil the plot of the movie. And so, and I won't, but I don't think it's something people should walk into not knowing that it's what they're walking into.
Like there's potentially upsetting stuff.
It's not potentially upsetting.
There's upsetting stuff.
Yes.
So if you are someone who can occasionally be...
If you ever get triggered by anything...
Look it up.
Look it up.
Damn. Yeah. We do this with the horror show all the time.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, like, these are people who bought tickets to a mystery horror movie, but then occasionally you still have to say, like, hey, there's this, this, and this. If any of that really bothers you, come check with me.
Yeah.
And we'll give you your money back if you have to.
Right.
Because I know that the conservatives like to make fun of us and our trigger warnings, but, like...
Can we call it something else right now? Can we call it a content warning?
Content warning.
Thank you. Yeah.
You're having fun.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm so sensitive and I can't. It's like, no, I'm trying to relax and some stuff isn't relaxing to me. Yeah.
I saw it in a packed theater. Mm-hmm. When the plot reveals itself, it definitely was one of those. You could hear a pin drop things. I don't think other people were enjoying it. There was not a lot of laughter. Most of the laughter, including my own, was I'm so uncomfortable right now. I wish I weren't here laughter. Huh. The guy behind me kept going, this is too much.
So it'll probably be streaming soon.
You're selling me on it. I might hit the late show tonight.
I know. And I'm like, I'm really intrigued.
It is a comedy about something that I can't find funny.
Okay.
I want to say like anything can be funny, right? Like I've heard funny rape jokes, right? I've heard funny 9/11 jokes, right? Mm. But I don't think and what the subject of this movie, I believe in my heart that there are funny jokes about that out there, but as a subject for a black comedy where it's just like they're gonna keep saying the thing and expect you to just laugh like you're so daring, I was like, no. I don't want to be laughing at this.
Is this more like if I look up to see what this plot is this like, and I'm not really offended by much,
yeah,
there are things, so if I were to go in and watch this movie blindly,
yeah,
would the reveal be more effective? Would it, or if I go in knowing,
I see what you're saying.
Or if I go in knowing, is that going to be?
I will say the reveal is like the third scene in the movie, so you will be losing the moment of going what the fuck, but you'll go what the fuck when you look it up. Did you just look it up?
There's too many.
Oh,
the problem with doesthedogdie.com. If you don't know what we're talking about, that's a website that tries to spoiler-free give trigger content warnings. And it started just for does a dog die, because that's a hard line for a lot of people. Now there's like 50 categories.
Oh, it's amazing. It's like, is a toy broken?
Right. So enough of these are yes that I don't know which ones you're talking about.
Mm.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Tell us off mic, maybe.
I'll tell you. Camila, I think, doesn't want to know.
I don't know. I'm reading something.
Okay.
Because I mean, damn. That's...
Are you reading it now?
Oh, I see.
Okay, now tell me.
Okay. Are you know now, Camila?
Yeah.
There's a good chance I don't get to this movie, so.
They say, what's the worst thing you've ever done? This is like what you, they're like having a conversation.
Yeah.
And the worst thing she's ever done is.
That's mm-hmm. really.
And like, the only reason she didn't go through with it is.
That's not a good.
No.
Dark comedy.
No. You know? And it's not funny. This is the thing. It's not funny. What I was trying to say.
That's absolutely something that there should most definitely be a content warning on that.
Because and that's like a significant portion of the movie is about that?
The entire movie.
That is the plot.
I thought they fucking cheated or something.
No.
That's the drama.
That's the drama.
I still might go.
It feels really irresponsible.
But now it's out
especially
of it.
Especially in this country is what I'm thinking. Like, yeah. So many people are going to walk into this movie not knowing what they're in for and are going to really mess them up.
Yeah.
I was having a bout of creative mania one night and I came up with a concept and remember that I write immersive theater, so never. But I was like, oh, and then this and then this. And I wrote out an outline. I took like 45 minutes and I wrote an outline for this thing.
And then the FBI knocked on your door?
And then I thought, well, never doing that. And right. I moved on and never did it because there's no... do you gain? Do you gain?
Exactly. There's no delicate or gentle way to go about just saying the words.
Yeah.
Is enough to like send anybody into most people into a tailspin. Right. Just go to a dark place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially anybody who's had any sort of connection with one.
Exactly.
Personal connection.
Right.
That's crazy. That's really, that's wild to me.
I know.
And it's not even like it's a British.
It's a
movie.
Norwegian director. I walked out saying there's no way an American made that. And I'm guessing a Gen Z guy made that. And he's our age, but he's Norwegian.
But still, he had to go through enough Americans, and Zendaya.
Zendaya's American.
Right. I feel like she, I kind of thought she had a little more sense or
she's young.
Sensitivity.
She's though.
She's
30. A grown up now.
She's like 30-something.
She's a married woman.
Right. Yeah. She's grown as fuck.
She's 29. She's making this at 28. You're still not that discerning when you're 28.
I guess. And I haven't seen Euphoria, and I'm sure that Euphoria is like 10 times worse. Whatever she's done on screen there.
Yeah, people should know that going in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a comedy?
It's a comedy. It's a comedy? Yeah. Anyway, I'll be bleeping it, but don't go see it without looking it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Woo. Back to the episode.
What else did you see?
I mostly just caught up on stuff that you talked about last week. I saw Project Hail Mary.
Yeah. What'd you think?
I liked it. It's too long. And everyone I know who read the book was like, but I wanted it to be 4 hours. But it's a good movie. I don't think I was at 10 out of 10, mostly because of the too longness, but really well done. And I would die for that little rock creature.
Oh, my God.
And
it's better than all humans.
Yes. Amaze. Very much liked it. And I saw Ready or Not, Here I Come. Mm-hmm. And it's not as good as the first one by a long mile, but I still enjoyed watching it.
I mean, I absolutely need to go see that because
of Sarah Michelle Gellar.
And Elijah Wood.
And Elijah Wood, yes.
And I think Sean Hennessy.
Is that how you say his name?
Hennessy, whatever.
I took half an hour to recognize him.
And the big guy too, who was in Smoking Aces, Kevin something.
Kevin Durant.
Yes.
Yes.
This is like, these are all people.
Those are all Camila people. All yeah. People. Yeah.
And you should have seen me when I saw the trailer in the movie theater. I was just like geeking out every person that was revealed. So I absolutely need to see.
And this. Scream Queen Catherine Newton.
Yeah.
Still at it.
She's great. She was the perfect casting.
Yeah.
For Samara awesome. Weaving's younger sister.
Yeah.
Who was kind of the same way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was good. That's what I saw, I think.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, like the first one was so great because I don't think we really knew where it was going. It was a nice little surprise. It was like, oh, shit. So it took a hard left and it was well done. And so now we're all like, okay.
I think that it's hard to recapture that feeling of, I can't believe how good this is.
Right, yeah.
You can't really do that with a sequel.
Because that was one of those, I think I just saw it like on HBO or something.
Same.
Just like, we'll see what this is about.
Same. I literally was like, all right, fine. And then I was like, I'm loving this. Right. This rules.
Yeah, it's not that. It's way better than They Will Kill You. We didn't talk about They Will Kill You.
No.
It's the same plot.
Yeah.
Really?
Weird.
Zazie Beetz goes to a weird fancy New York hotel, and it turns out that they're Satanists and she's there to sacrifice her, and also she's rescuing her estranged sister who is already at the hotel. It's the exact same movie as Ready or Not 2.
So this is what we know. This happens.
Yeah.
The movie theaters. This like is the same year that
Dante's
whatever,
Peak Volcano.
Yeah. Or the one with
Armageddon Deep Impact.
The Magicians.
Oh. Illusionist and The Prestige.
Yes, exactly.
I had already seen The Illusionist, and then when I was doing my study abroad, I was in Spain. I went to see it again just so I could say uno por el ilusionista. Anyway, they will.
Oh, that's a good reason to see a movie.
They Will Kill You is not. And Jules is right. You can get a glass of beer there. Anyway, it's Spain, not Amsterdam. But They Will Kill You. It's not very good. And speaking of Tarantino, it is the most blatant Tarantino ripoff. So there's so many, like, you're doing the Kill Bill thing with the camera cuts and the
even with the movie poster,
even with the feet, there is such
are you kidding me?
There's a foot close up and then a bad guy licks her foot, and I'm like, how much are you just trying to get him to notice you? Zazie Beetz is really good because she's really good.
Yeah.
I
want so much for her.
Me too.
Wacky moments. I wish they had done. I mean, Patricia Arquette is checked out. But Heather Graham's really trying, you know, and that was not very good. Also not very good. I don't have a lot of good news to share this week. Oh, Super Mario Galaxy. What are you doing?
Yesterday, one of the people on the improv team I coach said, I saw the Super Mario Galaxy movie with my brother because it's a game we played together when we were kids. And I said, I played that game with my husband.
I know it's going to make all the money and keep all of the movie theaters open. Yeah. And the kids are going to be happy. I feel like I've made this rant too many times. It can be for kids and good.
Yeah,
that's
really
allowed.
Can.
Right.
It could be for kids and good, like a Pixar movie. It could be commercial, very commercial and crass and good, like Lego Movie or like Minecraft. Minecraft was pretty good. This is just bad. This is just not. It's not funny. It's all. They really leaned into like action and visual splendor, and it's like, I just wanted you to do fun Mario stuff.
Also,
I don't care.
Can be good. Things can be for kids and good without being secretly for adults. Also, I want to say, like, did you see Arco last year?
No.
Arco was one of the animated feature nominees, and it is a movie for 5-year-olds. Like, only 5-year-olds will truly enjoy that movie, and yet, great movie, right? You know what I mean? It's like sometimes you need to make content for the youth only.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, maybe they were trying that, and it just isn't very good. I mean, kids will like it fine.
The way she described it is that she was like, here's a character. Here's a character. Remember this? Remember this?
Yeah, that happens. But it's all like, you know, it's like Ant-Man Quantumania. It's like, we made a weird world. Stare at it. Okay, I did. Now what?
Is it as ugly as Quantumania was?
At times.
Oh, boy.
And they just don't do a lot with the stuff they introduce. I'll spoil this because it was spoiled for me and then was still a letdown. I can only imagine if I had gotten hyped in the moment. The big addition is Star Fox is here.
Yeah.
And you want to be like, yay. But no, he just flies them around. He's just like,
really?
Oh, I'll give you a ride. That's it. Played by Glenn Powell. Perfect casting. Doesn't do anything with it.
You know enough about Star Fox, the character, to believe that Glenn Powell is perfect casting for Star Fox?
I know, right? Like,
I'd say so.
Okay.
I mean, I played Star Fox a lot when I was a kid.
There you go. That was pretty much my question.
Yeah. That was not very good. The closest thing to a new good movie I can tell you about is the Billy Preston documentary.
Oh, cool.
Billy Preston, That's the Way God Planned It. It does a really good job at being nuanced without flinching about his, you know, the bad parts of his life. And, you know, has enough. There's way too much Eric Clapton. None of us want to stare at Eric Clapton right now. But he's an important voice in that story. And it sells this thing really good where it's like, we're all like, if you know about Billy Preston, it's like, oh, he could have done so much more. He could have been so much bigger than he was when he was literally a Beatle. Like, what? How much bigger did we want him to get? Like, he had an amazing career, and it still feels like, untapped potential for a guy that was in both the Beatles and the Rolling Stones for periods of time.
I have a question about a separate documentary. The Football Town that is, have you seen this?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't even think I logged on Letterboxd because it doesn't feel like
barely a movie.
Yeah. It's 50 minutes of... They love football in Western Pennsylvania.
So that was my question, because Michelle on DVE was like, it'll tell you everything that you need to know about Western Pennsylvania's connection to the game of football.
No, and I was just tells you that there is a connection.
I was like, including the concussion study? Because that is the most important part of Western Pennsylvania's connection to football, as far as I am concerned.
It is very cool that NFL films, which are very serious about what they do, actually stepped up their technology to make this documentary.
Okay.
This is the best cameras they ever used and the best Dolby Atmos sound gathering thing.
I do love a good Dolby Atmos sound.
And they did that to, you know, depict football and like high school football and youth football. And, you know, it has a nice structure. It's not all Steelers in history. It goes through the weekend, right? So you like start on Fridays high school games, and then you do Pop Warner games on Saturday morning and college games on Saturday afternoon and build to the NFL. It's well structured. It's just a rah-rah yay football.
Okay.
There's nothing you need to.
Well, that's too bad.
Camila, what do you got?
Only thing, I watched Mercy.
How did that go for you?
It's not bad.
Okay, really?
Like, yeah, it was fine. I mean, the first time I watched it, I tried to watch it, I fell asleep. But then the second time I watched it, I fell asleep again. So it's, you know.
NyQuil. Movie NyQuil.
Yeah.
You didn't have to pay for a 3D ticket, so.
That's right. Wait, that's right. Yeah, you watched it in 3D. That's why you hated it so much.
It certainly didn't help.
Right, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it was fine. It's to watch for free. It's I think it's on Amazon Prime right now.
It is.
If you...
But Chris Pratt.
I rewatched Field of Dreams for the first time since I was a kid. Good movie. I think I would have told you a week ago, oh, that movie is totally overrated. Nope, it's good.
There was something, though, and I don't know if it was just because I was only half paying attention mostly through the beginning of the movie, but it looked like by the time we get to the end that Chris had lost like 10 pounds. So I'm just wondering if there was like a gap in filming.
Ozempic.
It's really hot in that chair.
Right.
It's like a sauna. Like you come out like, oh.
Like, don't hate that.
Can I be positive about something?
Please.
Oh, the 1946 noir Lady in the Lake. That's what I have to be positive about with Robert Montgomery. And it's a film noir detective story entirely first person in 1946. So like you're walking around.
Where'd you watch this?
Taped off of TCM, so good luck.
Okay. But
that's a good one. Should we draw a movie?
Yes, let's do it.
Who just said the Lady in the Lake?
Lady in the Lake.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, don't watch the miniseries on Apple. It's of the same name. It's so...
Definitely don't watch Lady in the Water by M. Night Shyamalan.
Never seen it.
How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, the 1967 musical.
Sean, you have two vetoes. You don't have to spend them.
No, you don't have to.
Now I feel like I have to as a favor.
No, you don't. Wait,
first, let's see if it's available.
Okay, yes.
While I think.
It looks like it's on Prime.
Here's what I can do for you. I'm pretty busy. I'm not doing anything if it's over 210. And that's not that great of a... Oh, it has... Fosse's involved.
Ooh, Fosse's involved.
With original staging. No, I'm looking... I'm not looking at the film. I'm looking at the film.
Yeah. Two hours.
The film was produced by United Artists and directed by David Swift with original staging by Bob Fosse.
Morse from Mad Men. Who was he in Mad Men?
You've convinced me.
Oh, that guy. It was like the old... Wow, this is when he was young.
I said 210. It's 201.
Great.
Yeah.
All right.
The charming and scheming.
It is a comedy.
All right. Listen, we can watch it for free.
And it's a musical.
And Fosse's involved.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm in.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to me. I don't think I've ever even heard of this.
Yeah, it's a like a rags to riches guy starts at the bottom and like sweet talks his way. It's basically, what's that Michael J. Fox movie we saw?
The Secret of My Success.
It's basically Secret of My Success.
Well, it's not. I mean, I say that because I'm not like a musical fan, super fan, but I'm adjacent. And yeah. I usually like, you know, pick up
you
stuff.
Know.
Here to, yeah. So I guess I'm wondering, like, once it goes, like, will there be something that's familiar to me? Am I going to, there'll be a song like, oh, this is where that comes from.
The song, The Brotherhood of Man is the main song that I remember.
Okay.
Mm.
We'll find out. Stay tuned, listeners.
This episode, which we established early on. No one's listening to is ending flat.
Except for you, listener. Except, thank you. We love you.
Man, I can't believe you're here.
Right. Still
you made
there,
it this far.
On. Yeah.
God bless you.
So now a guessing game no one will get. This went to number one June 5th, 1963. That was the number one movie in America date for 55 Days at Peking. What was the number one song in America?
And it's
Beach
something,
Boys.
Yeah, I was going to say Beach Boys, too. It's something we've never heard of, you're saying.
No, you've heard of it. I just don't know what would make you think of it or how to lead you to it. No.
Is it a girl group?
Mm.
No.
I don't know. It's a girl.
Yes.
Okay.
Dusty Springfield?
No.
Girl. What's her name? Annette Funicello.
No, but you're in the ballpark.
Petula Clark.
No.
Lulu.
Is that a person's whole name?
Yeah.
No.
She sang To Sir With Love.
This person, much later in her career, was nominated for Best Original Song for a song in Fame.
Irene Cara.
No. No, you're thinking of Footloose.
No, Irene Cara
did Fame, too.
Irene Cara did the song Fame?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, it was a different song from Fame.
In 63?
63.
What a feeling. No, that's still Irene Cara, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's that? Was there somebody named Gloria that was on the soundtrack of Fame?
Was there, Sean?
If there is, it's not who I'm looking for. She did bubblegum pop type songs that were very... You might feel pass over the line into irritating.
I feel like when we learn the answer, I'm going to get annoyed by you having said that. I feel like I'm about to wholeheartedly defend someone.
Her best song.
Brenda Lee.
Such a good guess.
I love her best song, but some of her songs that aren't as good include That's the Way Boys Are, Maybe I Know, Sunshine, Lollipops, and Rainbows.
I don't even know any of those.
Her best song is You Don't Own Me.
Leslie Gore.
Yes. Fuck yeah.
So like, is it It's My Party?
Song.
It's My Party.
Okay. Leslie Gore's amazing.
I love
Lesbian
that song.
Lesbian icon, first of all.
I didn't know.
Yeah. Like, she was one of those people who was like, I'm not going to stay closeted. I'm not going to, like,
good for her.
Publicly talk about it, but, like, I'm just going to go out with my long-term girlfriend.
But like, It's My Party
and then there's
Sunshine
the
Lollipops
song. Like, Judy's Turn to Cry is also great.
Yeah, I think she was good low temp mid temp. I'll listen to Leslie Gore in the car on the way home.
All right.